Well, today we will cover about the 10 lepers. So, 9 of these lepers are Israelites, and one is a Samaritan. And there's only one that is thankful to the Messiah for the healing. You would think that the one would be an Israelite, but no. The one is the of the hated Samaritans. That is the only one that comes back to thank Jesus for this miraculous healing. So I thought, since we're mentioning here about this Samaritan, that we would. I found an article that this Don Stewart wrote about who were the Samaritans, and he put it on blueletterbible.org. So I printed off his article, and I thought we'd read this, and then we'll go over 6 occurrences of Samaritans in the New Testament. 4 are positive interactions, and then 2 are negative, even though they're diffused and they kind of end on a better note, even those 2, but those they couldn't be classified as good positive interactions, but the other 4 are good ones. Okay, so during the ministry of Jesus, there was contact with a group of people known as the Samaritans. The Samaritans were half Jew, half Gentile. The race came about after the Assyrian captivity of the northern kingdom of Israel in 721 BC. Certain people from the nation of Israel stayed behind, and these people intermarried with the Assyrians, and that produced the Samaritans. Okay, now, 100 years later is the more well-known captivity. And it was 586, but we just call it 600 years. So we say a little more than 100 years later was the Babylonian captivity. And that was of the southern kingdom. That was of Judea. And that was the tribe of Judah and Benjamin got taken into Babylonian captivity, since the northern kingdom was already taken into this Assyrian captivity. Okay, so he had 2 points on here, and then he had the summary that I put as point 3. But anyway, so we have 3 points we're going to read about. The first point, he misworded this. He should have said, the Jews had no dealings with the Samaritans. And I just did not catch that. Otherwise, I would have changed that myself. But point number 1, the Jews had no dealings with the Samaritans. We are told that the Jews had no dealings with the Samaritans. In a conversation that Jesus had with a Samaritan woman, we are told that she said the following from John 4:9. Therefore, the Samaritan woman said to Jesus, how is it that you, being a Jew, ask me for a drink, since I am a Samaritan woman? For the Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. Okay. Point 2. The Samaritans had their own temple and religious system. So the Samaritans has 3 things. First, their own temple. Number 2, their own copy of the Torah, the first 5 books of the Old Testament, and number 3, their own religious system. Now, on with this Torah, this is the same as the Sadducees operated off of, where they only recognized as God's word the Torah, and they rejected everything after Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. After Deuteronomy, they rejected everything else of the Old Testament, the Sadducees. So did the Samaritans. Now, a difference here is that the Torah that the Samaritans used, and he does not comment on this, but it was slightly changed, slightly modified version of the Torah. And I got on the internet and they said that the Samaritans used a more ancient, a more primitive Hebrew language in their writings than did the Israelites. And then as they and then they said that it was kind of like a mixture of the Hebrew Torah and the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Hebrew Torah, and it was like a mishmash is what they mentioned. But anyway, Kaufman had mentioned that, and I've mentioned this in the past. I didn't look any further, but all Kaufman said is there were slight differences in the Samaritans' version of the Torah and the Israelite version. But they were small and minor. And whenever Jesus talked to the woman of the well, that obviously was not an issue because that was not brought up. The only thing that was brought up is the place of worship. And of course, they were worshiping in the wrong place. Okay. There was an issue among the Jews and Samaritans as to where the proper place of worship was located. And the following exchange took place between Jesus and the Samaritan woman. John 4 again, verses 19 through 23. "Sir," said the Samaritan woman, "I can see that you are a prophet. Our ancestors worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem." And Jesus said to the woman, "Believe me, woman, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know." They worshiped in ignorance. "We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming and has now come when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for they are the kind of worshipers that the Father seeks." So, this is an explanation of why Jesus was already having the 70 disciples go and teach Gentiles, and he told them, "Do not worry about any food restriction. Whatever they serve you, you eat. There are no food restrictions for you." And here he's teaching, Jesus is teaching the hated Samaritans, because the location, the law of Moses was quickly coming to an end at this point. And he was not binding on non-Israelites any longer any of the law of Moses. He wasn't binding because he says the time is coming and it's already now that God's kingdom is at hand. And this is a reference to that. And things will drastically change once God's kingdom comes. So he, in the short time before this, the few months before, or year or two, he wasn't binding on these non-Israelites. Okay, now here's the summary. And this is really the meat of the matter. And I almost thought about just copying and pasting just this, but because this is all really basically I was after this wording here that he wrote on the summary. But I went ahead and did these other page and a half too. But anyway, the Samaritans were a group of people who lived in Samaria, an area north of Jerusalem. And it's north, it's between Judea and Galilee, as here on the map. We've gone over that. So every time that the people went from Galilee to Judea, they either had to go around Samaria, and I guess that's what they did. It seems like, and Kaufman talks about this, that they went to the east side of the Jordan River and went down south to Jericho and then cut west. But so they had to cross the river, Jordan River, twice in order to avoid the hated territory of the Samaritans. But anyway, so they were half Jews and half Gentiles. When Assyria captured the northern kingdom of Israel in 721 BC, some were taken into captivity while others were left behind. The ones that were left behind intermarried with the Assyrians. As a result, these people were neither fully Hebrews nor fully Gentiles. The Samaritans had their own unique copy of the first five books of Scripture, as well as their own unique system of worship. At the time of Jesus, the Jews and the Samaritans did not deal with one another. Jesus, however, ministered to the people of Samaria, preaching the good news to them. This laid the foundation for Acts 8, when Philip the evangelist taught the Samaritans that God's kingdom had come and what was required of them to become members of his kingdom. Okay, any questions or comments on this? Then, yes.
One thing, it was just when the Assyrians came, they conquered all of Israel.
Okay.
Except those that were inside the city walls of Jerusalem.
Well, now, they didn't go down to Jerusalem. They didn't go to Judea. They only took the northern kingdom away. They didn't touch Judea. The Assyrians didn't.
Yes, Sennacherib said he shut them into the wall like a bird in a cage. And of course, those that were in the south went into the city walls of Jerusalem. But Sennacherib said that he shut them up like a bird in a cage.
Hmm.
His comment on that.
Well.
And of course, some have said that was an indication that those in the city were protected in relationship to those that are in the church were protected, and those outside were not. But of course, the majority of those that were in the two southern tribes, they went to find their refuge in the city walls.
Wow.
But Sennacherib said that he, now whether he was bragging out of turn or not, that's
yes.
The comment that's recorded in Assyrian history.
Okay, well, I'd never heard of that. Kaufman didn't, and he hasn't, which I haven't read a whole lot about Kaufman commenting on that, except just always heard the northern 10 tribes that went into the Assyrian captivity, and then Judea and Benjamin were not, Judah and Benjamin weren't affected, but then they got taken into the Babylonian captivity 100-something years later.
And we were talking about cats. That's the reason why those in the 10 northern tribes area, after the Assyrians mixed all the peoples together to keep them from revolting, all those that had been mixed up, transported over to that vacant area with only the old and the lame, had not been taken away. And they were not worshiping God. So God sent, according to the Bible, God sent lions in there to kill them. And the people there said, well, the gods of this particular area are mad, so send us a priest to tell us how to worship the God of this territory. And so that was the reason why they had the first five books. They had pleaded with the Assyrian government to send some of those Jewish priests back to teach them how to do that.
Oh.
Well, there's some backstory to that.
I know there's a lot of backstories, and there's lots of other history, because I just typed in Samaritans, or who were the Samaritans, into YouTube, and there's a lot of history. There's a lot of different things on there. You know, it seemed somewhat more in depth than I was interested in getting into. But yeah, there, like you were saying, there's more involved than just the surface thinking.
And got their attention with them big cats.
Okay. Now, I didn't run across that on what these people were talking about, the Samaritans, but there were quite a few different things that happened through the centuries of why there was this intense hatred, and there was also bitter resentment of the Samaritans against the Jews. And one occurrence that I did pick up on, it was during the Maccabee time, which was in the time, the 400 years of God's silence between the Old Testament and the New Testament, these Maccabees, and I'm not real sure about all about them, it was some family that they were kind of the rulers or something of the Jews, of the Israelites. But there was one of these rulers that was a Maccabean, and he wanted to extend his territory, and his name was John something. And maybe they said he was a Seleucid. I think that might have been what they said. Anyway, he wanted to extend his territory, and so he decided he was going to go and capture Samaria territory, the Samaritans' territory, to extend his power and reign over them. And so he went up and he destroyed their temple that they had on top of Mount Gerizim. And that's what this woman of Samaria was talking about, that they worship on Mount Gerizim in the high places. But anyway, he went and destroyed that. And so that was about 100 years, maybe 100 to 150 years before Jesus was born. And the person that was telling this on the internet, he said that this was also, they still had bitter resentment, these Samaritans did, for that one, at least that one occurrence. There were other things that went on through history that the Jews did against the Samaritans. And then there were things that Samaritans did against the Jews. It was back and forth through the centuries. But that one thing was a thorn in their side, the Samaritans, still 100 years later when Jesus showed up. Any other questions or comments on this? Okay, now there are six occurrences of the Samaritans in the New Testament. The first and the last are negative, and then the four in the middle are positive interactions. Okay, the first one is from Luke chapter 9. Jesus and the apostles travel through a Samaritan village, and the village rejects Jesus. And John and James, the two sons of thunder, Jesus' cousins, first cousins, say, "Jesus, do you want us to call upon God and have him bring down fire and destroy this village just as Elijah called upon God to bring down fire to burn the altar?" And Jesus said, "No, don't do that. I am here to save lives, not to destroy them." See, he was wanting to be an ambassador of goodwill and break down this intense hatred. But we can see from James and John right here, from Luke 9's account, of the hatred that they had for these Samaritans. They are just giddy, wanting God to destroy this village that rejected Jesus. Jesus said, "No, we will just go to the next village. This is no problem." Jesus was very patient. He knew the history. And you don't end bad history overnight. He knew it was going to take time. And so Jesus cultivated this and cultivated. And then we're going to see in this example here about something, how this cultivation has paid off. We'll see at least two examples of that. Okay, that's number one. So this one, I said this is a negative interaction. But then Jesus diffuses that negative interaction by just saying, "No, we're just going to leave here. This is fine. Don't worry about it. We'll go to the next village." So Jesus turns it into where it's not a negative there. Okay, number two. It's the parable of the Good Samaritan. And you notice, I'm confident that this is not by accident. After his own apostles wanted to annihilate this whole village of Samaritans, I don't think that's by accident that it's the very next chapter that Jesus is giving the parable of the Good Samaritan. He's wanting to cultivate these, at least, his apostles to tell them, hey, these are not bad people. And guess what? What they don't realize that we'll talk about here in a little bit, they're going to be part of God's kingdom too, just like you are. So you better break down this hatred that you have and remove this hatred. Okay, so he comes up with the parable of the Good Samaritan. Then the third, and this is the second positive example, is what we'll cover today in Luke 17, are the 10 lepers. And one of these is a Samaritan, and it's the only one that comes back to thank Jesus. Okay, then the fourth example here, and it's another positive one, the Samaritan woman at the well from John 4 that we read two accounts from two passages from this account. And in here that we did not read, the Samaritan woman says that they know that there's a Messiah that's going to come, and Jesus lets her know, I am He. I am that Messiah that you've been looking for all these centuries. I am He. And then number five, this is the fourth positive interaction. The Samaritans became members of God's kingdom when Philip brought them the gospel message in Acts 8. So, just think of what the damage would have been if Jesus had said, okay, well, go ahead, call on God and have them destroy that village. Well, that would have, all the goodwill that Jesus had built up with the Samaritan woman and in that village and all of they were actually in Samaria, the town, the capital. And then destroy, that was woman at the well, but wherever they were traveling through in Luke 9, if they had destroyed that, that would have broken down all this other good good teaching and diplomacy that Jesus was working toward. It would have all just been wiped out in just one deal. But since Jesus defused that situation and they didn't destroy the village, then here we are in Acts 8. These Samaritans are ready to receive God's kingdom. And they are ready to become members of God's kingdom. Now, we'll read here in Luke chapter 10, in 17 today. All 10 of these lepers, and Kaufman didn't comment on this, but all 10 of these lepers recognized Jesus, and they knew Him, and they recognized Him as the Messiah, and they knew that He could heal them. So, even this Samaritan, so that's how much, and these others were Galileans, because according to Kaufman, they're on the northeast border of Samaria, the southeast border of Galilee, on the border of Galilee and Samaria. And they recognize Jesus. This is how much He has been around, and I'll go ahead and mention this. Contrast what happens here within the next, I guess, week, because Kaufman thinks that then Jesus from this point here gets with the caravan of the Israelites from Galilee as they are traveling south to Jerusalem, and He travels with them. So if so, then this is just the next week or so. And it's 50 miles is what they would have to travel from this northeast Samarian territory. So that would be a two-day journey But, you know, they can make it 3 or 4 days, not push it as hard or something. But anyway, I'll say probably within a week. And here, Jesus goes into Jerusalem. All the people recognize Jesus. And they welcome him into Jerusalem as their king, as their Messiah. Then, in that very day, Sunday, Jesus goes and drives out the money changers out of the temple. So he's in the temple there, and he's in the temple daily teaching them. Jesus even tells them this, "Was I not with you daily in the temple, and you could have arrested me at any time? But you arrest me under the cover of at midnight in the dark." But anyway, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and even Wednesday morning is the last time that Jesus enters that temple, and he gives the scribes and the Pharisees these 8 woes. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees. 8 wrongs, 8 sins that they are committing that he's trying to correct them with. And that just builds up more hatred and resentment on their part, unfortunately, due to their hard hearts. And but he leaves the temple there. Here, these 10 lepers recognize Jesus, but the chief priests, the other priests that come to arrest Jesus, the soldiers and the elders, all that whole group that comes to the Garden of Gethsemane that Judas brings with him to arrest Jesus, they don't recognize Jesus. And that's what they have to have Judas identify him among the other 11 apostles. And so Judas goes and identifies Jesus with the kiss. But Kaufman didn't comment about this, but I thought this was strange that here Jesus was in the temple. I would have thought that these priests and elders and maybe the soldiers, somebody should have recognized Jesus and not had to have him identified, but they didn't. Whereas these isolated lepers, people that had this bad, tragic leprosy disease, that were isolated, separate and apart from the other people, they even recognized Jesus. He had made himself known that much. So anyway, I guess that these people that came to arrest Jesus, they weren't paying attention, because the people knew on that Sunday, I'll say Sunday morning, I guess, that he came in on his triumphal entry. All the people recognized him. So anyway, I thought that was a strange contrast. But here is the last occurrence of a Samaritan in the Bible. And it's also Acts 8. And I'll say the last occurrence that I know of with the quick, easy, what I looked up quick and easy. I didn't do an exhaustive search and try to, but this is as far as I know, the last occurrence. And it's the same account here in Acts 8. But it's with Simon the sorcerer, Simon the magician. And this is more of a negative connotation. Everything was going just fine with Simon at first. Here, Philip came and was giving the good news and telling them what was required of them to be a member of God's kingdom. And they were overwhelmingly being baptized and becoming members of God's kingdom. And so was Simon. Everything was just fine and hunky-dory. Philip was performing miracles to show that he was from God and that his word could be trustworthy, since God was giving him miraculous powers. And then Philip was so excited that God's kingdom was opened up to the Samaritans, he sends word down to Jerusalem to the apostles to tell them. Well, Peter and John come up. They make haste and they go straight up and go to the place where Philip is, and they see the good response that these Samaritans are doing, which obviously this was the groundwork that Jesus had laid, and that's why they were so readily accepting the message. And then Peter and John, being apostles, have the ability to give miraculous gifts to others so then that these other people could perform miracles. So they started laying their hands on these other Christian Samaritans now, Samaritans that are Christians, and they have the ability to perform miracles now. Whereas before, Simon had only seen, and they'd all seen, only Philip performing miracles. Well, now there's other Samaritans. Well, Simon sees that, and being a street magician himself, yeah, boy, now this is the valuable power right here. So he goes to Peter and John and says, let me buy this ability to give miraculous powers to other people. And Peter quickly shuts him down and says that you are in the gall of bitterness and the bond of iniquity. And you have neither part nor lot, part nor portion with what you are asking. Because why? Because the ability to give miraculous powers to other people was only given to the apostles, no one else. And Simon was not an apostle, so that's why he had no part nor lot, or no part nor portion with this matter. And so then this is a negative occurrence. However, it ends on a positive note, because Simon is repentant, and he said, pray to God that these things that you said will not come upon me. So, and that's how the text is left. And so that seems like he's repentant. So we'll hope that that's where it ends, and he doesn't ever regress to anything into the dark arts or anything ever again. Hopefully he didn't. Hopefully. The Bible says nothing more about him, even though extra biblical things do have things about him, and they say all kinds of bad things about him. But we'll leave that. We'll just hope that that's not true. Any questions or comments on any of this?